Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. And also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page, if you aren't already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And we're joined by a very special guest today. This has been in the works for a week or two now, and excited to announce we have Kyle Mann of the Dime Drop, who also contributes in The Ringer. Kyle, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. I was talking about something off the air before Brendan got on here, and I just wanted to stay on the air. Just, it's cool to see you kind of growing up the way you are with your channel and also getting the Ringer contributions. Just how did that all come about this year, and what made you start that channel?
People that follow me, I guess, have probably heard some version of this a few times, but I used to be in advertising. That was kind of what I did. And, that was my career. And I was a copywriter. And I don't know how much you all have been around that field, but you get laid off a lot if you work in advertising. And I'd had bad luck with that twice in a year. So I was just like, I want to keep working. So I was like, I'm going to keep just trying to stay sharp. So I was like, everybody that knows me knows I'm obsessed with basketball. It's all I talk about all the time. And I was like, I'm just going to write about basketball. So I was doing it for myself for a little bit, and then it just organically kind of went somewhere. It was really kind of amazing. I didn't plan for to be in the spot I'm in right now, but I've really, really enjoyed it, and interacting with fan bases and Suns fans in particular. I feel like Suns and the Kings, a lot of the teams that were kind of involved in this past draft, those fan bases were really nice to me, and particularly Suns fans, I feel like have been really cool to me. So thank you to any of you that might be listening.
I think over in Phoenix, we like when anybody outside of Phoenix gives us a look here to break down the team a little bit more, because it can feel like we're just ramming our heads into the wall at a certain point, you know, dealing with this situation the past couple of years. But the video stuff that you do, I think, is particularly cool, especially to see a guy like Josh Jackson be featured. But for you to take a look at some of the guys that don't get that microscope, you know, you're not doing, you do plenty of stuff on the superstars too, but it's always fun to see a guy like Josh Jackson get broken down in depth. And I'm sure that's where Suns fans mostly in the past little while would know your work from. So I guess we can start there. Let's start at the very beginning, because I think that's where the excitement was at its highest with Jackson. What were your impressions of him coming out of Kansas into the NBA, and then after that rookie season, kind of around the time you made that video, the Leap video, where were you with Jackson, and then kind of where have you seen him go this year, and is that better or worse?
Well, I think kind of the overall, if you kind of could attach a narrative to Josh Jackson's just basketball life, I mean, I was paying attention to him prior to Kansas even, because it's a poorly kept secret by me, but I'm a Kentucky guy. I've grew up here, so I've always paid attention to recruiting, and that's just a really big deal here is college recruiting. Everybody, you could, any Joe Schmo in a liquor store could probably tell you who Kentucky's recruiting and things like that. But Josh Jackson came up, and he was sort of on my radar. And the thing with him is sort of, I think the overall narrative with Jackson has been the guy was sort of a dog, you know, a dogged kind of a player, just high effort, high energy, and that got him by for a long time. And there's always this kind of thing that happens with prospects, I wonder, where he was so high energy and physically dominant that I wonder if maybe that stilted some of his developmental, you know, curve. So, you know, you get to Kansas, and some of his flaws start to kind of show themselves. You know, he's not like a high volume, high efficiency shooter, which we've seen some of that in going into the NBA, and I he's not like a high level playmaker. Sort of the thing that I keyed on in the video, that those strengths still kind of remain. They're still there. You know, when he's worked into a lather, his energy can be a real plus for a team, like on the defensive side of the ball. To be honest, I haven't been just like devastatingly disappointed, because I never really expected him to be a star in the NBA. I always kind of expected him to be, like, I'm using the word again, high energy, sort of a glue guy, sort of a Marcus Smart type, Tony Allen type that can get to the rim and maybe hit some open shots. I mean, would you what would you say your all's expectations were from him when he was coming in? Did you think you were getting a star?
Yeah, from my point of view, I mean, I was really high on Josh Jackson. I think I had him two or three on my personal big board. And also Ryan McDonough, the former GM of the Suns, right after the draft, he kind of said Josh Jackson. There wasn't a better fit in the draft with Josh Jackson and Devin Booker. So I think from the outside looking in, also from just covering them every day, it just seemed like from the very beginning, Kyle, they were hyping up as far as like a defense offense superstar duo. And they really thought Jackson had some real star upside there.
I think he's one of those guys that came into the league and maybe within a month you were like, it's kind of crazy he was the fourth overall pick. At least that's how I felt. It was just like in immediate hindsight, it was kind of like, wow.
Yeah, I've been kind of, I think I told Evan, I'm working on a video on DeAndre Ayton right now, which will, so even more relevance I for some reason have always had like a weird connection to Phoenix. I think it's because when I was a kid, they were like one of the cool 90s teams, you know? Mm-hmm. So like Evan, were you asking me about this, about my profile picture?
Yeah, your profile picture, if anyone.
I was wondering the same thing.
People ask me about this all the time. I just gravitate to the Suns for some reason. There was a weird science pun there. But when I was a kid, you know, I was like obsessed with the NBA, and I came from, you know, a background where my parents were pretty choosy about like spoiling me, I think. So I never had like the nice Jordans, and I never had things like that, but they occasionally would throw me a bone and get me something. But I really wanted a jersey. And obviously as a kid, you want a Michael Jordan jersey. Every kid does, doesn't matter where you live. And one day my mom just came home with a Dan Majerle jersey, random. he wasn't like a favorite player of mine. I didn't ask for that. But the funny thing about being a kid is instantly when I had that jersey, he became my favorite player. So I always kind of had a connection to the Suns. But what I was going to say, circling way back, is that there's an interesting thing, and I don't know if you guys have kind of observed this. The groupthink that goes around the draft is pretty incredible. Like, it's really, really hard to live in a bubble. And there's these narratives that take over where we just think, since everybody keeps saying it around us, we just have a really hard time thinking for ourselves. Where, you know, I wasn't really involved in the NBA draft world when Josh Jackson came out, so I didn't really see it that way. But the same thing kind of went on with Ayton. It's like, why did we think it was just such a sure thing that Ayton was the assumed number one pick? Can you all speak to that at all? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think we both have a lot of thoughts on why that process unraveled the way that it did. But I mean, Evan, it was basically from maybe the beginning of conference play on, the local media just kind of spoke it into existence.
Pretty much, yeah. And
they talked about him like he was a son.
They really did. And they local media was hyping up as a Hakeem Olajuwon type right off the bat. Like from day one, he'd be a 25-10 kind of guy. Obviously, as we know, he's going to be another year or two as far as dominance goes for that. He's going to be more of a project than probably people want to admit. But also, just we were also on the Luka train over here in Phoenix. We're one of the few on that Luka train, so we got our own criticism thrown our way. But it just seems like from the very beginning, it seems like Brent's saying, it was DeAndre from day one.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it was that local connection too, for sure. I mean, the fact that he went to Arizona, he was right here. Definitely, and he went to high school here. It kind of all was like the perfect storm for the media to just latch on.
Yeah, because it's interesting when you lay out even some the other big guys around him. It's like it doesn't seem obvious now that they're playing in the NBA. It's like, well, I mean, you guys know. It's like and I go into this in the video too. It's like even stylistically, like from a fit standpoint, he's not a great fit with Booker. Really, he's not a great pick and roll partner with Booker because he's not really a high fly. What do you all think about this vertical thing? And this is something I talk about in the video. I don't know if my video will be out by the time. I'm thinking it's like next Tuesday, but he doesn't seem like, I looked it up. He's only had like 41 alley-oop catches this year that have been dunks on the season, which seems low for him. Like he's not like a high flying over the top lob catcher. And he's also not a stretch five. So it's like, well, how is he a good fit with Booker then in pick and roll situations? Have you all observed that?
Yeah, I feel like the The stretch will probably come. I think that the coaches and Aiden himself have been saying all year that it will happen. At this point, it's probably something that we'll really start to see next season. But he practices him. He takes him and shoot around. He's getting comfortable. We saw him take him in that, the, you know, rookie, sophomore, the, you know, whatever it's called now, that All-Star weekend game. He took four or five of them. But as far as the lobs go, to me, I think part of it is the system that they're running and the lack of, until Tyler Johnson came in and kind of started to right the ship a little bit, they just didn't have that secondary playmaking. So the ball is moving side to side in Igor's offense, and there's not always somebody who's going to be able to throw that lob consistently or the spacing to keep the defense honest. I think that really has been the majority of it, because we've all gotten crazy excited when we see that pick and roll actually happen. There was one in the Milwaukee game late where Aiden was able to, it wasn't a lob, but he got the ball on the move and was able to finish through Giannis. So when it happens, we definitely take notice, but it's been a process for sure.
Yeah, pretty much the same as Brennan said. Like, he's been in a role where he's just been like a guy setting screens on the high perimeter and just kind of just getting his own as far as offensive rebounds go. Most recently, they're running the offense through him a lot more, but it's kind of been about the first 30 to 40 games till they really started giving him more of a usage. Like, his usage for the first 30 to 40 games is around 16%.
Yeah, it's up to, it's up to 20.6 now. I've been really interested in how efficient he's been. Well, something that I kind of go into the video is it's easy to sort of pick him apart based on our idea of where the modern big guy should be going, and sort of saying you're not this, and just keep smacking the clipboard with the expectations of what he should be. But it's like, there are still those sort of traditional, I always say this, and Zach Lowe says this all the time. It's like, it's not like the NBA is like smaller, like big guys have gone away. It's just like non-skilled big guys have gone away. So, and Ayton does fit that mold. And I've been really impressed with just how efficient of an ISO post guy he's been. He's right up there with Embiid and LaMarcus Aldridge. I think Aldridge is at 42.9% frequency on post-ups, and Ayton is not quite at that number. I had it written down here. Well, he's only turning it over one out of every 10 times out of post-ups. And it seems like he's making the use of what he gets within the offense right now. So I'm really interested to see how he handles his role expansion as he goes on. Is he going to continue to keep that efficiency high, and how they're going to build around him? But I think you all made a really interesting point about Tyler Johnson adding a playmaker, because that seems like something they really lacked.
For sure. I think that's why we're interested to talk to you about John Morant here later on too. It's definitely a lot of the problem this year for sure, for Jackson, for Ayton, for really anybody on this team.
Speaking really quickly, just about the Suns core, Kyle, what do you think from the outside looking in over in Louisville? Just, you have Mikal Bridges, you have Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, Kelly Oubre now too. Maybe TJ Warren sticks around, who knows? What do you think about the Suns' young core, also the possibility of even getting a guy in there like a Zion or a Ja Morant on top of that?
Oh, man, Zion is a whole other thing. I mean, Zion is basically like a symbiote that could just come in and suit, and he covers so much. Like, honestly, from a deep, you could have two minds about it. I mean, if you're looking at, the NBA is an offensive arms race right now, but if you want to add another playmaker, if you want to add somebody that can, that's, Morant is an incredible, he's a really, really good passer. I guess we could just launch into it. He's a really good ambidextrous passer. He's slippery kind of getting to the rim. I've heard a lot of people compare him to Russell Westbrook. I don't see that at all. He's definitely not a big shouldered, get you on your heels with his strength and speed type guy. He's a lot more slithery, he's somewhere on the spectrum between like a De'Aaron Fox but he has sort of ambidextrous finishing, sort of like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander too. It's really hard to find a one-to-one comp for him. Somebody backing up a truck. What was that?
Oh yeah, that was me. My bad.
but but he's also really explosive too. I'm sure you, I mean, everybody's seen that. My worry for Morant is that I don't, unless he just changes defensive, and it might be part of his context too. I mean, he's almost like in a high school type situation where he's playing on a team where he carries so much load that defensively, I'm sure they can't afford him to be like a big gambler and picking up fouls because they just need him so much. Mm-hmm. He accounts for, I forget what his averages are this year, but I mean, it's over 20 points a game. His usage is really, really high, and he accounts for a lot of the assist percentage on the team. So defensively, with him and Booker and Ayton, that trio, you know, throw Bridges in there. I mean, I love Bridges, really good on ball and team defender. I don't know that I love it. I still think that they might be, I don't know that that solves any of their problems. Like, I mean, they're one of the worst interior defensive teams in the league. They're in the bottom five in like basically every category. I'm sure you guys have seen these stats. 30th in points in the paint, 29th in fast break points, 30th in second chance points, 30th in defensive rebounding, 29th in defensive rating. I mean, it's bad. So, and I don't know that Morant addresses any of that. Now, if you add Zion in there, Zion is the type of fly around guy that could alleviate a lot of Ayton's sort of in space concerns. Because Ayton, I think, is a good positional defender, and I think we've seen some really promising glimpses of that. I mean, even some of the stuff he did against Giannis rightfully got people's attention. I'm sure it got you guys going on social media, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But I think that Zion sort of fills in the gaps in a way that could really help. So, obviously, what a scorching hot take. I think I'd rather see Zion in that situation. But, you know, if it comes to it and Morant is available, I mean, I like him better than I would like, say, an RJ Barrett. I think Barrett would be a disaster on the Suns. I don't see that being a good move.
Alrighty, guys, before we go on to our next segment here, I just want to tell you really quickly about our Locked on NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked on NBA Net on Twitter. I think it is one of the more valuable resources on NBA Twitter. Brent and I have our account synced on there for your Phoenix Suns coverage. I know you listeners love hearing Locked on Suns, but if you want to get more of a national scope, go ahead and follow at Locked on NBA Net for the best Twitter coverage around.
Want to also remind you guys to take advantage of everything that Homey has to offer. You've been hearing me talk about them for quite a while now, and they're just that exciting. They are a service that's coming into the market here in Phoenix, really starting to spread their wings. I'm sure you have seen them elsewhere and really taking over. They make the process cheaper, easier, smoother, less hassle than really any company out there. And That's really all that it takes to convince me, and I know that you guys are just as excited as I am. Homey sells any priced home for the same low cost of just $1,500, a flat rate of $1,500 to list and sell your home. That means that on average, Homey customers are saving over $10,000. These guys also provide you with a team of realtors and attorneys to help you qualify for a loan, as well as a $5,000 buyer refund to help with the closing costs on the back end. So as you get into the middle of this year, I know change can come rapidly. Sometimes you have to move at the drop of a hat. Sometimes you just take a while to find the place that you want to be. Whatever that situation is, Homey can make that process smoother, cheaper, and easier for you. To learn more about my friends at Homey, text Homey, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's Homey, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All righty, Kyle. Let's dive into Morant a little bit. You were at the OVC tournament, correct? You got to see him a few times there. And what were your thoughts? Is that the first time you've seen him in person?
No, the first time. I've been kind of focusing on him because I'm planning on doing a deep dive on him soon. And I was kind of wanting to go get boots on the ground and get my own footage too. That's another thing we could talk about some other time. But yeah, I went and saw him at my alma mater at Morehead State, and he kind of cruised and kick their ass. So that was sort of a fun game. But I went up and the Suns, like, entire front office was up there too in Evansville.
And Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Well, I saw people keep trying to take pictures with this guy with cornrow dreads, whatever you want to call him. But and I was,
and
like,
you were like,
that?
Who is that?
Yeah. Who is that man? But finally they had to, like, shoo people away from him because they were bothering him so much. But Magic and Palinka were there in the front row.
Yeah, ESPN tried to get Magic to another tampering fine. They were asking him every single possible question to try to get him to say John Morant, and he wouldn't. He didn't. He learned his lesson, but that was pretty funny on the broadcast.
I didn't see that or hear about that. That's pretty hilarious.
What were your thoughts, though? He was pretty incredible. I really don't feel like he, that, like Murray said, had any business beating that Belmont team, and yet here we are. He's going to be in the tournament to all of our satisfaction.
Yeah. I mean, this state in particular, we all are really rooting for Murray. Hopefully they don't have to play another Kentucky school so that we don't have too much gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands over that. But college basketball, big deal here, guys. I don't know if you're aware. But
yeah, not a big deal here. So
people get so upset. That Belmont team, really good. Dylan Windler, I don't know if you got to see him at all. He's a really interesting player that I hadn't seen in person. The kid just has the ultimate green light. He's really, really fun to watch. Big-time shooter. It's like 6'7", I think. Morant, what I came away with, you know, it didn't show me anything I didn't already know in terms of his skill set, but I enjoyed that he rose to the moment. Both of the games, I like gamers, you know. I like the guys that whenever they don't like the conversation, they pull the Don Draper and they change it. They change the conversation to dictate it the way they want. Like Morant, on multiple occasions, and I even tweeted this out while it was going on, I was like, this is a situation where Morant, if he is a star, should impose his will. And he did every single time. I mean, whether it was what I really, really like about him is that he has that same sort of Luka, Trae Young, three-level pick-and-roll ability where he's not in a hurry. And you see a lot of these guards that are super athletic, they spend most of their high school and college careers driving in top gear because no one has, you know, they've never run up against guys that can hang with them. So you see him develop kind of bad habits, similar to Josh Jackson. But Morant has really good pace and feel. Like he's really, I mean, he can get to the rim, and he's obviously really explosive. But he's a great lob thrower. He seems to have, and when I say third level, I just mean either trying to score, hit the roll man, or find that secondary person that's in the corner. And he's really, really good at manipulating the defense and taking his time to see if he can pull that help defender off the corner and hit somebody for an open three. Now, he's not playing with high-level rim runners. He's not playing with a high-level short roll guy. He's not even really playing with high-level shooters. So it's interesting to think about, say, if he were with the Suns and Mikal Bridges is over there open in that corner, I just wonder how many more easy looks he's going to get, how many more easy looks Book's going to get because of that. Book's one of my guys because he was a cat too. But I just really liked his makeup as a player. He showed me something this weekend. I was impressed. I came away really impressed.
I'm glad you brought up the Suns really quickly, just trying to think of that fit, because outside of Zion, I do think John Morant is the best fit in the draft for the Phoenix Suns. That point guard need's been there so ever since Eric Bledsoe said he went to the salon, didn't want to be here. So I think it's just interesting. Like, when you think more about it, Kyle, how does John Morant stack up to other recent top five point guards like a De'Aaron Fox or a Trae Young, so to say?
Well, you know, it's I have my wonders about. I don't think that Morant. I'm tentatively going to say this now. I don't see him as an all-star level player, but I see him as a quality kind of rotation guy for a while. Because he's a good enough athlete, I really would like to see him get a little stronger, like see him become, you know, more interested in defense and to just compete more. And he kind of has that in common with Trae Young too. In terms of stacking up, I mean, he's not on the same. I saw Schmitz comparing him to Trae Young. He's not on Trae Young's ball skill level in terms of the balance of his skills. I would take him over Colin Sexton today, probably. He's not as laterally explosive as De'Aaron Fox. Like, his top end speed in the open court, it isn't as good. And I don't know that he's got that, you know, yo-yo ball on a string kind of thing in his handle. But who else could we compare him to? Shea, I guess. He's a better passer than Shea. Shea's more of a sneaky scorer, probably a better sneaky scorer in the pick and roll than Morant. But he's, you know, for every way that you could criticize him, he's got some strengths that balance out where, I don't know if I had to rank him, I would say I'd still probably put him after Trae Young and Shea if we were redoing the draft this past year, but I would put him ahead of Sexton. You could maybe argue me into going ahead of Shea, but I doubt it because I like Shea's size and switchability.
It's funny. I agree with you. I think Trey's a good bit above him just because of the threat of that jump shot too on top of the passing. But one thing I was wondering about with watching Morant this weekend in both of those games was I kind of wonder if the passing is – it's obviously there. It's next level. The vision that he has, his ability to see stuff. Like the minute he crosses the half court line, he's already watching the play unravel. But I wonder if we're more impressed by it because of his size. I wonder if we're just watching him and we're like, wow, I didn't know that guy could do that. And we're still in that honeymoon phase of watching him, or it's just kind of crazy that he can. That's one of the things I was wondering. I'm like, I think Morant has some interior passing stuff that he was doing in that game that is a little bit better than what I've seen from Trey, but I don't know. Maybe I'm going crazy and overrating the size thing, but what about the shooting? Because Morant, obviously that's the big thing that people will be watching too as he gets to the NBA. Where do you land on that? He had a couple pull-ups, a couple catch and shoot threes in that Jacksonville State game, a couple more in the Belmont game. Where do you land on his shooting right now?
Well, let me see here. I'll pull up. I actually have a video that I took so I can watch this in slow motion. I took some slow motion video of him warming up when he was at Moorhead because I could get close and get a good look at it. He does have an odd shot pocket that is like directly in front of his face. I mean, I have several screenshots where it looks like he has a basketball for a head. That's where he stops. And if you keep going... It does seem like that offhand is pretty involved. I don't know that he's ever going to be like a high level catch and shoot type of guy. It's not broken, you know. He's got good wrist action. It's soft. I'm not totally confident about that. That's one area. Like talking about Trey, like you said, yeah, it's that is an area that is a big concern. Definitely. His percentage on the year, I think, is in the 30s still. He doesn't force a lot of bad ones. That's another thing.
Yeah, he's at 34% on the season.
Yeah. It seems like he kind of has an idea of who he is. Another thing I was going to say is that he seems to play with a lot of joy. And I like guys like that. He does have a good time playing basketball. And he enjoys creating, which is that's a really infectious, something I've said a bazillion times, that's a really infectious kind of cultural thing for a guy to bring to a team, which I think would be really good for the Suns.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually what they've been preaching a lot the past month or two is culture and continuity. And I think Morant, with what you're saying there about the joy, I think that'd be a really good fit in the locker room here. But one more thing I wanted to ask about Morant before we go to our rapid fire segments about the NBA and the Suns in general. I just wanted to get your last final thoughts on Morant compared to the other guys in the draft class. I know Zion's and he's number one for all of us here, but is Morant the clear number two for you in this class?
Yeah, that's tough, really. I mean,
it would say a lot about the draft if the number two guy you said you don't see as an all-star. I mean, I don't even know if I'm saying I don't think I disagree with you necessarily about Morant, but that's kind of crazy about the class overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's an odd if my kind of draft philosophy is unless there is like a clear like guy that is so good that you should pick him and maybe think about restructuring what's going on with your current roster, then you should probably go fit. But the problem with this draft is that there's just not enough of those guys. Like there's not enough narrative altering players. Like in 2018, I mean, there were like 5 to 10 of, I mean, like really, really good players that, maybe not that many, but a lot. You know, 2018 was an exceptionally strong draft. Like I was saying, in terms of number two, I mean, if you're just ranking who I would pick in terms of just what I call the Monte Carlo model, which is just like if we're playing pickup like the Dream Team did, Monte Carlo, who am I picking? If it's just if I want to win. I mean, I don't know that I would go Morant too. I would probably think about going Barrett too. But like we were saying, I just don't see if you get in there with like Bridges and with if you guys plan on keeping Oubre around. And RJ likes to take shots. He's not like a high level playmaker. I don't think that he addresses a lot of the needs. I just don't. And also that just the people dynamic of Booker, Ayton, and Barrett, I just don't see that. I wonder if Booker and Barrett would get along, honestly. I don't know that that would work. And then, and I think that's a big part of drafting too, is just kind of knowing your personnel. Morant would probably be the best fit right there. I don't know that I would beat myself up about taking him there. And it doesn't feel like conventional wisdom, so you're not kind of working against that. So I like the pick there. That would be probably my number two. Was there more to that?
No, you're right on. I think Evan okay. And I are kind of leaning the same way. We definitely have talked about the fact that Barrett is not going to really make sense here with the way the roster is being built around Booker and Ayton right now. But we will, as Evan said, close with some overall NBA talk, just kind of see where things are here and maybe a little bit more about the draft. Who knows? Some rapid fire questions. Before we do that, though, I want to remind you guys to check out the Locked On NBA show, the national show here on the network. We got a bunch of good stuff this week. We had Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball giving you the breakdown of all the big local stories from over the weekend. I think they had the Celtics beating the Lakers. They talked about some of the playoff matchups, the Clippers last night winning big. All that stuff is really getting crazy in both conferences here as the playoffs kind of shape up. So if you want to stay up to date with all of that, especially as the Suns season winds to a close, go check out Locked On NBA. Subscribe to that show. Make it part of your daily routine, just like you make Locked On Suns. All righty. Evan, why don't you you start us off here. Just give us a question to chew on.
One more thing. Go jump in one more time. I was going to say.
You're the guest.
Yeah, I'm loquacious guest, sorry. What I was thinking about, too, is the Suns are in an interesting situation here where you're most likely going to have a top three pick. You know, the odds are in your favor forever there. And I really like Darius Garland is another guy that I neglected to mention. Now, he's a guy that would want to shoot a little bit more, but it's in a tough situation where I feel like you probably should take Morant there. But it would also be nice to have a guy that could fly around and cover some of like a high level fly around defensive guy, sort of akin to like a Mitchell Robinson type. Like Jackson Hayes is an interesting guy, but the problem is I don't think you guys are going to have a pick in that vicinity in that mid to late lottery, mid first round, right? I think you guys just have the one pick. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, that's kind of what I was getting at. But anyway, you don't have to keep that. That's just a thought.
No, you're good. I mean, I think that's the defense is exactly why Zion makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes sense everywhere, but it's particularly here with the problems at the four for the Suns, too. It's not just that they need a point guard. They need a power forward pretty bad, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I hope you get him.
Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
I said I hope you guys get him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think he'd be a great fit here. But let's go on to our rapid-fire questions here, Kyle. And I'll start off here first. And let's think just about the point guard situation with the Suns right now. We take out John Morant off this list, take out Darius Garland off this list. Let's not talk about the draft of the point guard situation. There's going to be some different options out there for the Suns in free agency, like a Ricky Rubio, Terry Rozier. What do you think makes the most sense for the Suns if they somehow do luck into, like, let's say, Zion and number one overall? Which point guard in the open market makes the most sense to fill that final gap?
I'd have to look at the free agent kind of pool there. Between those two that you mentioned, I would definitely go Rubio, just assuming both are healthy, both are, you know, because I don't think they need more shot takers. I think they need, you know, Rubio would give you a lot of what Morant would give you, maybe not the same level of athleticism, but his DNA as a player, I think, would be stylistically fit what we were talking about. I think he'd be a really good fit there.
I definitely agree.
Let's talk a little bit more about Ayton then. You mentioned him a little bit at the beginning, but what thinking a little bit about the four spot as well. What do you just, and even if you have a player, go for it, but just honestly, stylistically, what kind of guy do you want in that spot opposite Ayton, knowing the limitations that Ayton might have as a rim protector, kind of the offensive incongruity you were talking about with Booker. What kind of guy do you think makes the most sense opposite Ayton in that front court?
Well, I think if you're going to go down that road, you've got to either try to think to yourself, do we want to just plug something in here to continue with our continent, which I maybe just answer my own question, because you guys were talking about how they're preaching continuity. They probably want to keep this group together. They probably know, I mean, it's well documented how much the national kind of basketball popular thinking has crapped on Phoenix's front office lately. They probably to rebuild again, would probably be a pretty upsetting proposition, I would say, to the fan base. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. So I would assume that we're going to try to go forward with a piece that's available to us. And if we were going to do that, aside from the playmaking, which we know they need, again, Zion would fit a lot of this too, because he's a two-way player and a great playmaker. Another just kind of fly around defensive, like backline type player that could cover up a lot of the mistakes, the places that, because it's a younger team that you get a lot of situations where they're just getting abused and like back cuts and slip screens and things at the rim. It'd be nice to have an eraser back there. In this draft in particular, I don't know that there really is one. I think Daniel Gafford is a guy that could play on that back line and be effective. Like I said, Jackson Hayes is a guy that could play on that back line. And I guess you hope that another factor in here is that you hope Dragan Bender continues to get better and improve. In terms of the free agents, like I said, I don't have that pool in front of me. Do you have any guys that you're potentially interested in?
Maybe like a Nikola Mirotic, Thaddeus Young kind of guy. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I could see Young. Young would be a nice veteran kind of presence on that in that defensive core.
I like Taj too. Taj is another guy I've thought about in that role.
Totally. If you can keep him happy. It was really interesting to watch tape from the beginning of the year. Ariza just looked chronically unhappy. just unbelievable. Because I'm watching the games without sound, and I screenshotted like two or three different occasions where, he tried to feed the ball to Ayton, and Ayton fumbled it out of bounds, and Ariza just looked like he wanted to cry. He was just like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, that was a rough 2 months with the Suns. I think a lot of fans aren't really fans of Trevor Ariza anymore after that situation happened. But
it's because we didn't have a cook.
That is right. Yeah, there was no personal chef in Phoenix. That's what he told the Washington media, one of the reasons why he wanted to leave. So that's an interesting.
Is that true? Oh, yeah. Man, I missed that.
But let's move on from the Suns here. Just some more general NBA questions to finish this out. And the Milwaukee Bucks and also the Philadelphia 76ers, the Eastern Conference led by those two teams, also Toronto's in there as well. How do you see the East shaking out this year? I guess the first time in over a decade without LeBron there.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. The GOAT's not guarding the bridge to the Eastern Conference anymore. I love the Milwaukee Bucks, man. They're just so fun to watch. I mean, even if you're just a general, I don't have an NBA team, so I can kind of just pick and choose what I like and who I want to watch. But and I go to bed like a baby every night. But I still think that it's gonna there's gonna be a situation where. Sneakily, I picked it at the beginning of the year. I still think the Celtics are going to be there when the rotation's shortened down and they don't have to sort of keep everybody happy for the stretch run. I still think they're going to be in the conversation. They also could lose in the first round. But I did a video on the Raptors earlier this year. They've got a closer now in Kawhi. You know, their team defense is really strong. It's a tough call. I'm going to lean Raptors. Just because I think that maybe schematically some things, and they picked up, Marc Gasol. I think that that's just another. When it comes time to play playoff basketball, like I said, and the rotation shorten, and you get to scout a team for a whole series, Kawhi is still one of the best players in the world, one of the best players in the league, and like I said, he's the closer that they sorely need. And I think their defensive DNA improved. Siakam's better. Something is going to shift with Giannis, and unless he goes to another level, which he could, I lean Raptors, but I could see any one of those three you would, I'm really dubious of the Sixers. I could see that just blowing up and them losing in the first round. I'm sure that, I don't know if any Sixers fans will hear this, so I'm not totally worried about that. But
if it is the Raptors, I think, speaking of kind of the bigger picture stuff, that definitely would make things interesting when it comes to Kawhi's decision this summer. That's obviously going to be huge. But it's like the one guy we're not talking about, but he might be, besides KD, the best player to change teams this summer. That's just, it's been interesting to me to watch how little he's being discussed, because I think we just don't know anything about him. But last thing I have for you before we close things out here, Evan can chime in too, but is there anybody in that got traded, obviously talking about the Sixers and even the Raptors, Gasol and Tobias Harris were two of the bigger names that got moved in February. What's the one player or a couple players that you've noticed changing teams that really stuck out to you? Like, that was a great fit. That guy's really going to help this team, even if it's just this season.
I like a lot of people love the Mirotić move. I thought that he's another really good fit for them. He seems like he's really happy there. I know they just added Powell, but I haven't really gotten to see if Powell's had much of an impact there at all.
We got to see his debut live, Evan and I.
Oh, nice. How did he do? I didn't get to see that.
Oh, it went bad.
it was not great.
Is he washed?
He was 50 years old out there. It was bad.
Yeah. Oh, Pau Gasol. I always thought he kind of looked like the Falconer from SNL. Do you guys ever see that?
No, not yet.
Not seen that one? Well, yeah, look that one up. Anyway, when he had a big beard, that's what he looked like. That one landed. Really, Mirotić, Harris has looked really good with the Sixers. Those are the two biggest moves. I don't know if I have a nuanced move off the top of my head that I really liked. Like you guys said, the Tyler Johnson move. But I don't even, that wasn't even a free agent deadline move, was it? Or was that?
It was the day prior? Before the deadline. Yeah.
Oh,
It was basically a deadline move. Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of skeptical of that. I was like, well, I don't really know about that move, but I think that's a good piece to keep around, at least in the short term, but we'll see.
One final question I have for you, Kyle, before we let you go. MVP prediction. What do you think? This is a crazy race right now with Giannis, PG, Kawhi. I think I'm forgetting a name, obvious
James
name.
James Harden.
Yeah, James Harden, definitely. Who do you think is going to win that? Because I think it's going to come down to maybe the final few weeks of the season.
I'm leaning Giannis. I'm kind of partial to – I just think that the statistically, I mean, I think it's really there. I mean, I think one of my friends tweeted this the other day. There have only been three players in NBA history ever to record 15 total rebound percentage, 25 assist percentage, and three block percentage. And that was like Giannis, DeMarcus Cousins, and Joakim Noah. There are all kinds of, you know, sort of statistical milestones that he's hit. Now, Harden's done a lot, I think, but I don't. It's a really good argument, because I guess you could be of two minds about it. You know, I think that the Bucks correctly sort of shifted their personnel approach, and obviously bringing in Budenholzer was a really big part of that too. But he sort of keeps that boat afloat with the gravity that he draws and the shooting that they have and that they've added to recently. I would lean Giannis, mainly too, because I think the Bucks are a better team. You could argue about whether or not the MVP should be on a good team, but I think historically, you know, the MVP has been on a good team, and I think the Bucks are better than the Rockets right now. That could prove to be wrong down the road, but I would lean Giannis. What do you guys think?
I would personally go Giannis too, but I think it's actually pretty close with Harden right now. But yeah, I would go Giannis, I think, pretty easily right now. But if Harden for some reason goes off like 40 points in March and April, then maybe we have a different discussion there.
Yeah, I got Giannis too. I just think what he's doing on both ends, historically good team, it's going to be tough. If Harden hadn't won last year, I think the narrative might even be more on his side, but it's kind of like we saw a better team around him and a better overall, you know, structure there last year, and they rewarded him for that. So maybe I think the craziness is going to be, it's going to be weird to look back on this year and be like, Harden didn't win the MVP that year. What in the world was going on? But Giannis has just been that good, I think, and it's really been his breakout. I feel like that's normally kind of the type of guy we give it to, right? The breakout on a good team, on a great team, who can kind of do it all, plays both ends. That just feels pretty perfect. So I imagine it will be Giannis.
Yeah, there's that sort of, it's the same thing like we were talking with the draft. It's like that battle, that grading of narrative versus, you know, what the numbers say. And there is usually, I sort of alluded to it too, there's always that like, well, how much does narrative play into it? How much should it play into it? Because we kind of, it does feel like we want to give it to Giannis. You know, doesn't that feel like that's in the air? We're like, yeah, we want him to be.
I definitely think they don't want to give it to Harden.
Yeah, I mean, Harden's, I looked at Harden's ISO percentage. He's ISOing on like 49.5% of his offensive possessions right now. That's the highest in the league by like 20%.
Oh my goodness.
It's high. Yeah, it's incredible.
Hey, Kyle, before we go, this has been really fun. Appreciate you coming on for an extended time here. And plug whatever you want to, your Twitter account, your work, whatever, to our listeners here on Locked On Suns.
Well, right now, I still have, is this going up next week?
Oh, this is going up.
It'll be today.
Oh, okay, today. Well, I'm finishing up something on Ayton, so cat's out of the bag on that one. I'm going to be finishing up this rookie midterm, even though we're past midterms now, just rookie kind of report card thing for the Ringer. And I'm hoping to get into some more draft stuff. Footage sort of guidelines will make that tricky. So apologies to any Suns fans that are wanting videos on every single prospect. That might be hard to do this year. But you can subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Ringer's YouTube channel. Mine is The Dime Drop. It should come up, and the Ringer is easy to find. And on Twitter, I'm at J Kyle Mann, and I usually am talking about basketball 24/7 on there. So give me a follow.
This was fun, Kyle. Really appreciate coming on, and hope you guys enjoyed this. So appreciate it, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.